one? Is that the report? What room that is? No, that probably is a report. Yeah, here's the report in spot.
Hey, you got it working. Well, you got a new one.
This is a new one.
Oh, it looks like it's
already recording? Yeah, it says it's recording. Okay.
Oh, yeah, there.
Okay, so I forgot to record. There we go. So, we're following the same continuum of the story of Abraham. And Gemma did last week. So far, we've read through all the way up, basically, to chapter 15. But we have not dealt with everything within those chapters. And one of the key stories in there hasn't been done yet. So we are going to do that this morning. And that is taken from chapter 12. It is the She's My Sister, famous story of Abraham and Sarah. And what we're going to do this morning is something some people aren't used to doing, but...
Studying?
Yeah, that's one thing. Thinking? No. Comparing texts that are similar. It's a very important skill to have because the people writing these stories for us are assuming you're doing it. So if you're not doing it, you're missing something. And... some traditions kind of shy away from it because it makes you ask questions that they don't want to ask. But I think it's those questions that can speak most to us. So we're not going to be afraid. And think about it this way. Abraham, okay, he's 75 when he leaves his home. He's maybe close to, well, who knows what he is. It's still chapter 12, right? So let's assume he's 75. Not much time has passed.
75 plus.
In the first verses, if you remember, from chapter 12, he's commanded to leave, and we just get a shotgun account of everywhere he goes. He went there, he built an altar called the Lord. Then he moved there. Then he went there. Then he started traveling south. What happened in all those things? You don't get a day-by-day account. You don't get numerous stories. In fact, out of his whole life, we have very few stories. So it's actually very significant when you get a story about Abraham. And this is one of the first stories after his command that you get. It's the She's My Sister story. And what's even more significant, when you step back, which we haven't read through all Genesis, so it's not exactly fair, but because we all have background, we know that there's going to be two other stories about She's My Sister. One for Abraham and one for Isaac and Rebekah. And so the question is, out of all the stories that could be told about Abraham and Isaac, why repeat the same type of story three times? Okay? It is significant, and it demands our attention. Okay, so we're going to give it that attention. Our main text is going to be Genesis 12. But because you get the same type of story... it calls our attention to compare them. And what you get is actually a lot of meaning. When you compare them, you notice what is missing here. So you can read through 1 Genesis 12 and ask some questions. There's a lot of blanks. There's a lot of stuff we have to fill in. And as all good literature, you have to read between the lines to actually understand it. And if you say that to conservatives, extreme conservatives, they kind of get up in arms and bristle and like, I'm a literalist. Well, even the most conservative read between the lines. Take Garden of Eden, for instance. It only mentions snake. Why do we get Satan in there? That is reading between the lines. So it's completely legit to do. In fact, required of good literature. So as we read this story, we ask questions. What is missing? What's going on? And then we're going to read the other two, and we're going to get some of our answers. And it will influence, when you look at all three together, there are some big ramifications that come out strongly that you wouldn't get if you just read this story, Genesis 12 in isolation. So, that's my preamble. Let's go to Genesis 12. And start in at the verse after he's traveling and going south and south and south.
Let's see what verse 10. Is that.
Verse 10. General, would you like to read for us? Yeah.
Now there was a famine in the land, and Abraham went down to Egypt to live there for a while because the famine was severe. As he was about to enter Egypt, he said to his wife Sarai, I know what a beautiful woman you are. When the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. Then they will kill me, but will let you live. Say you are my sister, so that I will be treated well for your sake, and my life will be spared because of you. When Abraham came to Egypt, the Egyptians saw that Sarai was a very beautiful woman. And when Pharaoh's officials saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh, and she was taken into his palace. He treated Abraham well for her sake, and Abraham acquired sheep and cattle, male and female donkeys, male and female servants, and camels. But the Lord inflicted serious diseases on Pharaoh and his household because of Abraham's wife Sarai. So Pharaoh summoned Abraham. What have you done to me, he said. Why didn't you tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she's my sister, so that I took her to be my wife? Now then, here is your wife. Take her and go. Then Pharaoh gave orders about Abraham to his men, and they sent him on his way with his wife and everything he had.
All right.
Enough?
That's enough. So, there was a famine in the land, is the opening of the story. So Abram went down to Egypt. I'm reading the NET translation, to stay for a while because the famine was severe. That's hilarious. Lagur is to live. To live. When it talks about the ger that lives with Israel, they're to be treated like a citizen. It's not talking about someone who's just like traveling through for a week or two. This is someone who has settled with you and is going to live for a while. A while is years and years and years.
Reside.
To reside.
Take residence.
So this is very interesting that it mentions, okay, there's a famine in the land. You might say it's quite logical to go elsewhere. And Egypt at the time, we find out a couple chapters later, is green like the garden of the Lord. You know, it's the place full of plenty.
Because the Nile River was always there.
Because the Nile River is there, and we all know living in this land, if you don't get rain, you have no water. It's much more dependent on the seasons. The Jordan is not...
The Nile.
It's not the Nile. You can say that again. In most places in the world, it would not be called a river at all. Maybe a brook.
Was it bigger actually at that time?
I don't think so.
Not much.
I don't think so. Once Brian shows up, he can.
Because you wouldn't have all the information.
Okay, maybe, but it's still not that big.
No, it's not huge.
But they said there were forests and trees and bears and things down in that area. It must have been more water.
Down or?
I mean, I've seen
David.
In the Shvela, I don't know. Down in the Jordan Valley, bears stay in kind of Shvela mountains.
If you go to the Kidron, they show you how it was. But I mean, the fact that remains is the actual width of the river. It's not the Mississippi exactly.
Yeah.
And geologically, one can see it was never vast.
Right.
And the likelihood is it was just more water in it at that time.
Yeah. Okay. It was more. Still comparably, it's not that big of a river.
Right.
Regardless, it's clear from our text that whenever there's a famine, people don't count on the Jordan for irrigating their crops.
Right.
For one, I mean, you'd be trying to push water uphill to most places. Anyway, to Abraham, he decides to go to Egypt, but the text specifically tells us to live there. And so the question arises, should he have done this? What do you think?
Well, the Lord said to go to...
Has the Lord said anything, though?
But the Lord said to go to Canaan.
Yeah, the Lord said, so far the Lord has told them to go to Canaan. He's told them, to your descendants I will give this land.
Yes.
And Abram builds an altar, and...
But God allows us some decisions by ourselves sometimes.
That's true, too.
Not in disobedience, you know.
That's true, too. And so how do we weigh this decision of Abraham? so far in the text, it's an open-ended question. But there are hints that it might not be a good decision. For one, it's coming in the same chapter he's just been told, you know, this is your land. This is the land you're promised. Notice he's just been praying to God. Everywhere he goes, he builds an altar, calls on the name of the Lord. He doesn't then, like, all of a sudden pray to God, what should I do? There's a famine in the land. He simply gets up and goes to live in Egypt.
He doesn't build an altar in there.
Right.
And think about all the people he had with him.
A lot of
that
people.
That they would have, you know, first his responsibility for them and the other, they may not share the same faith he has. So.
Right, but he's still their leader.
We've got a split, haven't we? Between here is a man with all his family and his wives and his whatever.
Lifestyle.
In terms of when he gets up and he goes from here to there, and he goes to Alan Moray, and he goes down to the Negev, he does all these things, and he, so to speak, and he worships the Lord. And then suddenly it's like there's a sort of panic, there's a famine, now what do I do? And it reverts to what we all do, which is, well, let's make the best decision.
Right. And verse 12 maybe adds to Abram's frame of mind. Because at the beginning of chapter 12, we've seen his great faith to leave his homeland and to come and do, like he responded where maybe Terah only did half. Of course, we're interpreting that as well. But here, as he approached Egypt, he said to his wife, look, I know that you are a beautiful woman. When the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. They will kill me, but will keep you alive. So he assumes the worst about the moral character of the Egyptians, right? So why does he just assume they're going to kill him to take his wife? Strange.
And also, thought that he would do in there.
Yeah. Also, let's just remember here, how old is Sarah?
She's got to be at least 70.
We know that she's 10 years younger than Abraham. If Abraham was 75 when he left, she's got to be 65.
She's pushing 70.
How many 65-year-olds do you know that you're going to, like, kill their husband to marry? I don't know. It's like... That's amazing.
But, you know, we can make fun of them, but then we go down in our story, and that's, you know, they still
did notice
yeah.
her. Yes, you're
it's
right.
Not, it's not me. He's some delusional guy that, you know, looks at his wife and says she's the most beautiful.
There's a midrash that I can't tell you where it's from because I heard it from Joseph Frankovic, but the midrash says that Abram hid Sarah in a crate, and so he's going through customs in Egypt, and the Egyptians decided to be mean and say of the crate, well, something about Abraham didn't want to open it, and so they said, well, we'll just charge you the tax for if it were pure silver. So Abraham's like, okay, I'll pay it. So like, wow, he's willing to pay for pure silver? Okay, we're going to charge you the taxes if it's pure gold. It's like, I'll pay it. Oh, you're willing to pay a tax as if this crate were pure gold? We're going to charge you as if it's pure pearls, which is like the highest. And so he says, okay, I'll pay it. And so then the Egyptian's like, I just have to see what's in this crate, if he's willing to pay a tax on pure pearls. So they open up the crate, and the beauty of Sarah is shown over all Egypt. That's the story.
I'll sing the opposite miracle. He's thinking they're going to kill her, and then when he finds out his wife, there's morality, he wants to give her back, like in a moral way. I'm not going to take your wife, you know. So was Abraham choosing a bad character of them?
Well, that's the thing.
Possibility, you know?
He's assuming that they have no morals because he thinks they'll just kill him, which is pretty much the Wild West, you know?
Maybe there's precedent that we don't know in the story. Maybe he has precedent.
Maybe.
Maybe they're ISIS.
Maybe. Maybe he has fear. You know, when you have fear, you tend to assume the worst. And you're not always completely rational.
Yeah, I mean, later we saw the like what they did. So
yeah.
There are
people, when there is a town that has no fear of God, the stranger can be completely abused. So it is right in that sense.
And question, how far was Canaan landed? Was there something between Canaan and Egypt?
Basically, Grab.
It was not Canaan.
Grab. Okay. Is between Canaan and Egypt.
What is
Grab? You go down today to Nahal Beso. It's It's on your way to Egypt. It's the last kind of positioning where you would consider it. It was later the land of the Philistines, right there before you go down into
Sinai. Close to Gaza.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, close to Gaza.
What's the word you used?
Grar.
G-R-A-R.
G-R-A-R.
Sorry, this is
I was the only one there.
Spelling's getting us.
I left it open. Okay. Now, Brian mentioned something a couple weeks ago. We were having a discussion about Abraham and Sarah, and he pointed out that they had an amazing relationship. Because in the ancient Near East, if you were childless after 10 years, it was grounds for divorce. And here we have this couple in their 70s, and he has never gotten divorced. He's never taken a concubine. And they...
It's because she's so beautiful.
It's because she's so beautiful. There's a serious bond there that is strong and has weathered all kinds of, for that culture, all the kinds of stress you can think of. And yet here, there seems to be a breakdown because he's basically going to give up on her. He's going to give her away. Because if what he says is true and someone takes her as a wife, he's not getting her back. So the other thing to remember is the whole deal about the promise. He's clearly interpreting it as the promise was given to me. Maybe Sarah doesn't really matter. Maybe that's not part of it. And so he's kind of thinking through what it means to be the father of a great nation. He's gotten, actually so far, he hasn't even gotten.
That's kind of what we're looking at. What is Abraham thinking all the time? What is he feeling?
Yeah.
What is he doing? What
he
is
hasn't
he
even gotten the word that it will be through his own seed. So he has no idea how he's going to be made to a great nation. It might be through, I think he would be assuming, it's through an accumulation of slaves or people that are loyal to him that will follow him.
And he thinks Eliezer might be.
And clearly Sarah is not going to be the one, in his mind, producing these offspring or great nation. And so she is, what do you call that? Optional, extraneous to the promise in his eyes. And, I mean, from Sarah's perspective, she obeys him. You don't really hear what she's thinking. She does it. But basically, she would have felt this. You know, after all these years together, you're just gonna give me away. You know, this has got to be a rift in their marriage. There's no way around that. But he does pose it to her as a life or death situation. Kind of like, if you don't do this, they're going to kill me. So it's not, in other conditions, I would never give up on you, but in the circumstance, they're going to kill me, so save my life by basically separating from me forever. Now, so in verse 14, it's true that Sarah was praised and was taken to the household of Pharaoh. And he treated Abraham well on account of her, and he received all this stuff. So, she basically became Pharaoh's wife. And then we have in verse 17, the Lord struck Pharaoh and his household with severe diseases because of Sarah, Abram's wife. So what exactly has happened? Why have they gotten all these diseases? And I think to justify our reading between the lines, we have to jump down to the next story and compare.
So my comment alone, Pharaoh wasn't really so moral. He got judged for what he did.
Well,
he didn't know either.
Right. He didn't know. Abraham didn't tell him.
It was God's protection.
Let's compare to Genesis 20, and let's see
just
what...
Before you go on, we have no concept of time.
Right.
And she, if she really is his wife, or just some passing concubine, we think he's his wife, don't we?
Yeah.
Then she could actually have become pregnant.
Yeah. If, well, yeah, theoretically, she was a little old. But
how did he think he was going to get out of that one, too?
Who, what?
How did Abraham think he was going to get out of that one?
Which one?
See, how do you know that he thought he was?
Right.
He's giving up Sarah. I don't think that he has this great plan to rescue her afterwards.
To just save her life. Better that she go on living.
Myself. Yeah. Better to survive.
Or preserve. Yeah.
Because he's basically...
He's preserving himself. He's not preserving Sarah. He's ditching Sarah.
Yeah.
I don't think he has any notion that she could come back to him at that point. He's just doing what he does to survive.
And was he going to listen to God and want to go back to Canaan? That we don't know.
But he's also preserving the promises in his mind also.
Well, that's the thing. In his mind, he's received the promise. And but what I would argue is he's looking at that promise differently now. And it's through the eyes of fear instead of through the eyes of faith that from before. And so that influences how he sees that promise.
She's expendable.
He's going to help God.
He's going to help out God. Exactly.
It's what the Arab...
So let's compare in chapter 20. Here we have again, this is right after the whole Sodom and Gomorrah story and the story of Lot and his daughters, what happened there. And all of a sudden we jump back to Abraham. And let's see, who would like to read chapter 20? Either.
From there, Abraham traveled to the region of the Negev and settled between Kadesh and Shur. While he lived in Gerar, Abraham said about his wife Sarah, "She is my sister." So Abimelech, king of Gerar, had Sarah brought to him. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, "You are about to die because of the woman you have taken, for she is a married woman." Now Abimelech had not approached her. So he said, "Lord, would you destroy a nation even though it is innocent? Didn't he himself say to me, 'She is my sister'? And she herself said, 'He is my brother'? I did this with a clear conscience and clean hands." Then God said to him in a dream, "Yes, I know that you did this with a clear conscience. I have also kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I have not let you touch her. Now return the man's wife, for he is a prophet. And he will pray for you and you will live. But if you do not return her, know that you will certainly die, you and all who are yours." Early in the morning, Abimelech got up, called all his servants together, and personally told them all these things, and the men were terrified. Then Abimelech called Abram in and said to him, "Why have you done this to us? How did I sin against you that you have brought such an enormous guilt on me and my kingdom? You have done things to me that should never be done." Abimelech also said to Abraham, What did you intend when you did this thing? And Abraham replied, "I thought there is absolutely no fear of God in this place. They will kill me because of my wife. Besides, she really is my sister, the daughter of my father, though not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. So when God had me wander from my father's house, I said to her, 'Show your loyalty to me wherever we go, and say about me, he is my brother.'" And let me run one.
A little bit more.
Okay. "Then Abimelech took sheep and cattle and male and female slaves, gave them to Abraham, and he returned his wife Sarah to him. Abimelech said, 'Look, my land is before you. Settle where you want.' And to Sarah he said, 'Look, I'm giving your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. It is verification of your honor to all who are with you. You are fully vindicated.' Then Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech, his wife, and his female slaves, so that they could bear children. For the Lord had closed all their wounds in Abimelech's household on account of Sarah, Abraham's wife."
Okay. So now we got some more information. First, let's just make our comparison here. Where is this?
Gerar
is right on the border before Egypt. It's the last stop, you could say, in Canaan. Sir, I don't have a map.
It's not another name for Gaza, is it? It's a different. Was Gaza a name back then?
Yes.
What's different?
Gaza was a Philistine city. To call it the land of the Philistines, we'll get in this chapter, is an anachronism at this point, but you can do it.
Who was the Biblical kingdom?
Gaza. We don't know more than that.
This is all before the Pharaoh story.
No,
this is after.
After the Pharaoh.
So this? Okay.
Right.
So here we have Abimelech, here we have Pharaoh. And here we have a famine. There's no mention of a famine here, but he goes there for some reason.
Is this what he turns out to be?
It's later on. It's later on in the story. We've jumped from chapter 12 to chapter 20, so some other things have happened, including Lot splitting off Sodom and Gomorrah, the promise of a son through Sarah happened in chapter 18. Keep that in mind. Okay.
Abram to Abraham.
So, it's interesting, we have some more details filled in this story. What are they?
What about Bathsheba?
What about Bathsheba?
The men in earth, so now it's a big loss. Because,
but not yet.
Okay.
It's interesting that it's, in both cases, it's the king's prerogative. If he sees a single woman, he gets to just take them.
Right.
And then he even says to God, Abimelech does, I did it with a pure heart. And God says, yeah, I know, that's right.
Well, the thing is, he, in both cases, Pharaoh gave Abraham a lot of cattle. Like, that can be a bride price.
Yeah.
Same thing here. So Abraham's getting paid for Sarah.
Okay.
So it's like, yeah, she's the superstar, so of course the king will want to marry her and pay up. But what does it say about...
That's a scary thought, you know. If what? Abraham's actually getting a bride price for his wife, and then he gets... the whole thing blows up in his face and he gets his wife back, plus goodies from whoever, kings and pharaohs. He's doing quite well out of Sarah.
He is doing quite well. And it says that in chapter 12. Okay, so we find out in this section that she really is a half-sister. In chapter 12, we actually don't find that out yet. So we understand that his
not quite lying.
His little white lie is a white lie.
And that it's an agreement from the very beginning of the journey that they would say this wherever they go.
Exactly. Which actually, you wonder if that's true or if he's stretching it, because we haven't heard it until the point where they leave Canaan. So it almost is like as long as they're in Canaan, he didn't worry about that. But as soon as they went to Egypt, then he worried.
Are you allowed to marry your sister yet?
Well, it was his half-sister. Apparently he was.
At that time.
There's no sanction.
Yeah.
As long as one parent is different, apparently he...
Well, you're not allowed to later.
Right.
But right.
Tamar and...
Well, that's daughter-in-law he marries, but...
No, I'm talking about David's son.
Yeah. Oh, Amnon and Tamar.
And she said, ask my father, he will give me to you as a wife.
Right. Mm-hmm. And whether that was true or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
But she's... fighting for her life, so to speak.
It's also true that when he's in Canaan, he's in a, let's say, his own cultural system, as much
right.
as one knows. And then he goes off to another situation. So he's really sort of saying, if we go out of the land, if we're going somewhere foreign,
right.
then you're my sister.
Right. Maybe there is that recognition there of God's promised me the land of Canaan. So as long as I'm here, like, I'm in the promise. If I'm stepping outside, it's dangerous. Because I'm not sure. Maybe there's like a half of an admittance that, you know, I'm stepping outside of the promise a little here.
This is a parable of all the bastard Jews.
You know, the other side of this is also if he admits she's his wife, then they have to admit she is barren. And that becomes a very negative relationship that goes around.
Yeah. Although his seems to be much more selfish, that if she's a wife, she's already taken, so then they have to kill him to get her. Mm-hmm. Where if she's untaken, they can just give him a lot
of junkies for 10 years, that's by definition.
Right.
Why is that silver rebuke?
Why is what?
Why is the silver a rebuke?
It's not a rebuke.
It says here in my Bible, thus she was rebuked.
What verse?
I've given your brother a verse 16.
No, it shouldn't say rebuked.
That's what it says here.
What verse?
Verse 16. Then to Sarah he said, behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Indeed, this vindicates you before all who are with you and before everybody. Thus she was rebuked.
Oh, venochacha.
No, I've got different. This
you
is,
could say,
this is
cover
the offense
vindicated.
Against you before all who are with you. You're completely vindicated.
I should say vindicated.
I
don't know why they went with that. That's weird. Because it's a covering of the eyes. It's to spare her any shame.
I can see the shame part.
Inflicted over
like,
it.
It didn't make sense to me.
Another thing in talking about this, it says that he did not touch her or go near her.
Exactly. It specifies. Yeah. So what does that mean about chapter 12?
In chapter 12,
that he may have touched her.
Not only may have, he did.
What are you basing that on?
I'm basing the fact that it did not specify he didn't touch her. And if they wanted you to know that he didn't touch her, they would have told you,
right,
like they did right here.
Right, there's two things to add to that. In chapter 12, it says that God plagued, he struck the Egyptians with plague. So there's something physical, like there's a punishment going on. So that
for instance, how did Pharaoh know there was a problem? How did he know? God doesn't show up to him like he does to Abimelech.
Right.
So presumably, everybody went infertile, like happened to Abimelech.
He just gets herpes.
Because the logic is, if Abimelech gets inflicted with infertility without even touching her, just because he took her into the household as if she's a wife, how much more someone who did, you know, and it said they had serious illness, so presumably something in the same venue of infertility, sexual disease.
So it implies that this was over a longer period. Otherwise, they didn't know that.
Exactly. Both stories have to be a longer period.
But that doesn't necessarily have to be. It could be a short period, too. You have to be careful, because then, was she not? His half-sister.
For every person
this is how rumors start.
For every person in your family to be declared infertile, you'd have to have at least months
in
go by.
Verse 17, it says, why did God strike Pharaoh and his house? Cause the God of Sarai.
Yeah.
And so there's that specific thing that Sarah had called out to God or something from her mouth.
Or the concerning Sarah. So it could be.
You could interpret it as the Bible.
You could
go both ways. Another reading to that Sarah said, "Hey, what's going on here?"
Yeah. Another key thing. Chapter.
One more thing. Pharaoh, like, he kicked Abraham out. But Abimelech gave him a visa, you know.
That's right. Yeah. Good.
The prize everyone was looking for. That visa.
Special meaning for you.
And he's even called a religious man with his visa.
Kick out of country. The last result here gives that land. So different end results, and he gets even more money. He doesn't just get the bride price in the beginning, he gets
sheep
extra
stuff.
Money. Here he does get slaves and donkeys and what do you want to call that? We'll just say money. Money, extra money.
Do you think there's any chance that Sarah actually said something to him before he took her as his wife, actually?
Where? Here?
Yeah.
Not if she's saying he's my brother. That would kind of ruin
the
cover.
No, but I mean, once she's in his house, before he starts touching her and doing all that stuff, do you think at that point she might have said something?
It doesn't appear that way.
Maybe it's like Jonah.
Because
the storm starts, and she's like, by the way.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
The cause of this storm.
That's what I
wonder. Well, she certainly wouldn't have said anything immediately because it appears that Pharaoh only puts two and two together when everyone starts going infertile or is afflicted with these serious diseases.
He's Pharaoh. He can do whatever he wants. Even if he said, I'm going out with his wife, he's still there. I don't care.
Maybe.
He's got his
ways. However, yeah, we don't really know because we don't hear Pharaoh's thoughts. Abimelech is clearly an upright person because he is innocent.
It's amazing.
He would care if he knew it was his wife.
It's amazing that he also knows how to talk to God.
Yes. First of all, the amazing thing, God appears to Abimelech in a dream. And Abimelech talks to him. And then first thing in the morning, he calls his people in and tells them all. And they're all afraid. And it's Vayil'u. They all have a fear of God. And it's really interesting because then right there, he says, what made you do this? And Abraham says, because I thought that there's no fear of God in this place. So it's quite ironic because the whole story up to then shows just how much they actually do fear God. And it's Abraham. This is why I was going back to the hint in the beginning. Abraham's reading into them saying they have no fear of God because that's what he's afraid of because he's got the fear. And
it's amazing how many times that theme comes up in the Bible of people of God not doing what they're supposed to be doing, and then their enemies hearing from God, and then saying,
yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's it. And then.
And then it's like forces them, like Jonah. Again, yeah. Jonah, the same thing. It's the pagan sailors who are the ones that fear God. Yeah. What have you done?
Yeah.
More than Jonah did, yeah. There's a lot of irony here.
I can't think of a common
the king is
current occurrence yeah. of that. You know?
Who wants
but
to
someone who's listening to God.
Who was whose father?
Abimelech is my father's
king,
right?
Worship, right. Idols his father. Whatever.
I don't know.
All of a sudden someone speaks.
Sure.
That comes
I think the time should necessarily matter.
The time?
Yeah, because when Esther was taken into that king's court, it was months before she actually went and saw him, right?
Right.
So time could also
right.
have happened here.
Well, here, that's what God, when God appears in a dream, he says, that's why I haven't allowed you to touch her. So it could be one of those things where she's, for some reason, been hidden back in the harem. But it implies, because it's telling us several times here, I didn't let you touch her, I know.
Yeah, but even in the first case, there's a potential that there could have been some time gone by.
Yeah, there's potential time went by, but it does say he took her as a wife. And normally in the Bible, if you take someone as a wife, it means you're sleeping with them.
I know, I'm just saying that in the case of Queen Esther, also she was going to be his queen.
But it doesn't say he took her as a wife until he took her as a wife.
Mm-hmm. Taking as a wife is a euphemism
yeah.
for banging the person.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
I see.
So, and interestingly here, Abraham prays for God, to God, to heal Abimelech. So, I don't know, was there a prayer for Pharaoh before they left? Or were they just kicked out?
Well, wasn't Pharaoh seen as a god and worshipped as a god?
Yes.
Where are you now, 12 or 20?
I am in chapter 20, comparing
right.
it to 12.
Right.
In chapter 20, verse 17,
right, that's right.
Abram prays for God and he heals the infertility.
It's the exact same phrase in both stories. 20 verse 18.
Because God had stopped
every
womb.
The wounds,
Which is exactly
the same
right.
thing in chapter 12, verse 17. Mm-hmm. That God had plagued the house of
Now there is another.
Yeah, but what's interesting, Gary, is that we wouldn't know, I mean, we've come back to how you introduced this whole thing. We wouldn't know that the Lord inflicted serious diseases on Pharaoh and his household because of Abraham's wife. We would have no, we would
what
have, and I had no idea.
Right.
Because the likelihood was this was sort of infertility across the board.
Right, right. You wouldn't know until you read chapter 20.
No. So that's the great thing about this comparison stuff.
Yeah, and then you think, well, that's true, because what would lead him to suspect adultery? Because if you're operating under the idea that there's a just punishment, like the punishment fits the crime, if you have infertility, you would think some kind of sexual deviance. Okay, so what's the problem? And then that would lead you to think, oh, maybe she's somebody's wife, or, you know. Another thing that was mentioned in chapter 20, another reason it's important to state that he never touched her, is because in 21, she becomes pregnant. And so we need to know that this is Abraham's seed. So it's interesting. Also, another thing, like, he had a lack of faith here to go to Egypt and to presume the worst about the people. We understand those motives more, and in chapter 20 fills in the blanks. Why did you do this thing? Because I assumed you guys have no fear of God. This one, of course, he doesn't go as far as Egypt, and there's a better result. Sarah does not get taken completely. It's a stage removed.
You know, the other crazy thing about this is that we always think of Abraham as the hero of this story. But if this were a Jason Bourne movie or a James Bond movie, and the mission was handed to Abraham or whatever, the person going on all the dangerous missions and seeing all the action here is Sarah. Abraham just sits on his butt the whole time and is like, "Oh, I can't do that. You know, Sarah, you go on that crazy mission, you know." And then Sarah goes on that crazy mission, you know, and goes into the she's the one who goes into the vault, you know, and gets the.
And it's interesting, this has happened once. Why would he try that again? Like, the first experience wasn't so great. You know, why are you going to repeat the same mistake? That's also fascinating. And you remember,
it such a mistake in chapter 12? I mean, he gets out, okay, he gets, he's been in there for however long, because there's a famine.
Well, notice,
he's now doing okay, he gets kicked out when they discover, he gets out, we all
It's after chapter 12 that Sarah suggests he takes a concubine. There may be a little break in their marriage at this point.
But I am glad that we're looking at Abraham's character, this wonderful man of God, for getting a few insiders of who he was, you know.
Yeah, and he is our father of faith. So it's actually encouraging to see when he has lapses of faith.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that God still considers him, when you look at his whole life, he is faithful.
Repentance.
So, so he does the same thing here. I would say he's still operating a little bit in the lack of faith, but he doesn't go down to Egypt. And Sarah doesn't get slept with by the king, so that's.
And it is post-chapter 15, which was the whole covenant and this amazing experience.
Okay, that's also what I wanted to note. Between here, you could argue he didn't know it was going to be through his own seed. Here, not only does he know it's through his seed, he knows it's through Sarah's seed. And he's still going to give her? Like, at this point, that's wrong, right? God has promised, chapter 18, Sarah's going to have a son.
Right.
And then he gives her to the king. You know, what's that about? Is that following the promise? I would say no.
A lot happened between 12 and 20.
He's planning on becoming rich and powerful and then getting strong and then killing Abimelech and getting her back.
Well,
I think that's a real James Bond.
Notice also, the other thing that's happened between 12 and 20 is he has a son.
Yeah, he has a son.
He's got his own insurance in his pocket. So now, if God doesn't come through with Sarah, it's okay because I have a legitimate heir, I have Ishmael. And so, in that sense, you could also say he's kind of, he's hedged his bets a little bit. And so, maybe that's also.
But he's already been told that it's not going to be Ishmael.
Well, but, you know, we've all been told things by God, and we still hedge our bets.
Ghost 26.
Both of these are talking about Abraham. Now we're going to go to my sister when it's Isaac and Rebecca and see how much the son has learned from the father.
Yeah, generation.
Chapter 26. And again, we have an Avimelech. Is he the same Avimelech that's just an idiot, couldn't remember the first time it happened? Or is it a different? I don't know. But again, we have a famine in the land, subsequent to the earlier famine that occurred in the days of Abraham. Okay, so Isaac is put in the same situation as his father was put in. How is he going to respond? And it says, I'm reading from verse 2 of chapter 26. Isaac went to Avimelech, king of the Philistines at Gerar. Well, the Philistines weren't yet there, but it's the same area. The Lord appeared to Isaac and said, "Do not go down to Egypt. Settle down in the land that I will point out to you. Stay in this land. Then I will be with you and will bless you. For I will give all these lands to you and to your descendants, and I will fulfill the solemn promise I made to your father Abraham. I will multiply your descendants, so they will be as numerous as the stars in the sky, and I will give them all these lands. All the nations of the earth will pronounce blessings on one another using the name of your descendants. All this will come to pass because Abraham obeyed me and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." So Isaac settled in Gerar. Okay? So now what have we learned from God's perspective? When there's a famine in the land, what should you not do? Don't go to Egypt. So this is the color of the way we read Genesis 12, that he goes down to Egypt. This was not positive. Isaac may have learned from his father. He also got a direct message from God. So he settled in Gerar, on the border, instead of going to Egypt. And he deals with another Avimelech, either the same or a different one. I don't know. Okay. So, when the men of that place asked about him and his wife, he replied, "She is my sister." He was afraid to say she is my wife, for he thought to himself, "The men of this place will kill me to get Rebecca, because she's very beautiful."
Same story.
So we have the same problem of beauty, only in this case, Rebecca is not his sister, right? She is maybe a distant cousin, not a sister.
This story is kind of a mix of the old and the
new. Yeah.
So the famine was in the old and the new. And also that she is very beautiful, sickness in the old and the new.
Okay.
So you're talking about it.
So in verse, we have to rush here a bit. Verse 8, after Isaac had been there a long time, Avimelech, king of the Philistines, happened to look out a window and observed Isaac caressing his wife Rebecca. It's actually Metzahek. He's playing with her. So Avimelech summoned Isaac and said, "She's really your wife. Why did you say she's my sister?" Isaac replied, "Because I thought someone might kill me to get her." Then Avimelech exclaimed, "What in the world have you done to us? One of the men might easily have had sexual relations with your wife, and you would have brought guilt on us." So Avimelech commanded all the people, "Whoever touches this man or his wife will surely be put to death." That's pretty strong. And then when Isaac planted in the land, he reaped in the same year 100 times what he had sown, because the Lord blessed him. The man became wealthy. His influence continued to grow until he became very prominent. He had so many sheep and cattle and such a great household of servants that the Philistines became jealous of him. And then it goes on into plugging up his wells and all that. Okay, so here, what happened? Does Rebecca get taken?
No.
Not taken, not touched. So this is the best case scenario. Although he does raise the issue, it could have happened, but it didn't. And yet, look at verse 12. Isaac plants a crop. How much does he get?
100-fold.
That is a miraculous bounty.
What brought the seed? What does the seed mean?
Whatever he's planting, it doesn't say what seed it is, but it's a seed. So he hasn't had children yet, but there is a miraculous blessing. And so it's kind of like Isaac obeys God by not going to Egypt. And he, I don't know, he doesn't seem to really do any better in the sense of talking about his wife, but the results are better.
I'm wondering about this thing that he's seen, warm caressing her, chatting her up, some sort of foreplay, who knows?
Of course. But whatever Abimelech sees so, makes him convinced that this is his wife.
That's right. So in a sense, he's much more... He's done it somewhere in public or out the window or whatever it is.
Well, if the king is in a palace, he's above most people.
Okay, so...
Let's say he's in his courtyard.
All I'm saying is that Isaac is a bit more upfront with the relationship rather than...
Okay, although he still made the claim that she's his sister.
I know, but... The other thing, just to go back to your hundredfold, something I thought of, doesn't Jesus tell a story about
he does
this and this? You will read, you know,
the sower,
hundredfold. And a hundredfold is actually a miracle because
yes.
Nobody reaps a hundredfold.
Yes.
And so I always think in the New Testament story, in the parable, it's more linked to one's total obedience and then the Lord can give you back a hundredfold.
Yeah. And so when you read these three stories together, there are some messages that emerge. One is, look at the geography. Egypt, and there's a progression. This is the worst case scenario. This is a little better. This is the best. And here is finally when we get God speaking. I mean, we've been getting little revelations as we go on. But here we get the main message, don't go to Egypt. And Isaac obeys that, and the result is a miraculous harvest. Remember that this was in a famine, right? That's how the story started out, was a famine, just like this. Instead of going to Egypt, he stays in the land, in Grab, and God blesses him. Amazingly.
There's a verse in Isaiah somewhere which says, don't go down to Egypt, she's a broken reed.
Right.
Doesn't it say before that you're not supposed to go back to Egypt? Or look at Jesus, right. Man, you can go back to Egypt.
It tells the Israelites later not to return to Egypt, but this is before that.
How come Joseph took Jesus to Egypt?
And how come the first Joseph went to Egypt?
Not Jesus.
Well, Jesus, he was commanded. They were commanded to take him there.
They were commanded.
It was a fulfillment of prophecy.
That's right.
Well, before we go downstairs, I do have to point out, everything is given in a context. There's never a case where God gives one commandment and you're supposed to apply that forever. You always have to seek God about things. Joshua, when he came into the land, before every city, he asked God, what should I do?
Right.
And it was never just like, go in and wipe out everybody always. Never. So there is a clear trend here, and the trend to assume is don't go to Egypt. But that doesn't mean we just take that and we can never go to Egypt. We still have to seek God. But the main point is that not going to Egypt is a sign of faith in God's promise.
You were born there, Egypt.
I was born there, yeah.
Born in Egypt. We have a ceasefire.
There can be good things coming out of Egypt. Moses came out of Egypt.
Sharon, it's not so much going to Egypt is wrong, it's not listening to God and responding.
Well, that's the thing. What motivated him to go to Egypt was not fully believing in the promise. And that's the key.
What does Egypt represent?
Right. It represents the security, the default of what Carla said. I'm going to help God out with his promise. You know, And that was a problem, not just Egypt is a place, you know. Egypt is...
That's an issue. I remember hearing a preacher recently who was talking about how we help God out.
Yeah.
You know, God says you're going to do X, Y, Z, so you go rushing into it, and I don't know, you talk to somebody that you shouldn't have. I can't remember what the whole story was, but it was a real example of how we think the Lord's told us to do something right. I'm going to help God out and get this right, because, you know, on his own, God really can't manage this. It's impossible. And we do it sometimes.
Because that's really what you say. Really, what the problem is not trusting God. So I'm going to go to Egypt. Not trusting God, I'm going to get out.
And you know, why do you worry about what you should eat or what you should drink, even the birds of the air or whatever? I read it this morning, but I can't remember the exact.
Well, and Elijah lived through a famine of 3 years and was taken care of.
That's right.
And so to kind of depend on God's miracle, like we see Isaac got blessed for obeying. And
it's also interesting that Hagar is basically Egypt.
Right. She probably was picked up here.
Was there.
Part of the servants.
Yeah. And Ishmael, when he eventually got married, his wife was from Egypt.
Right.
So there is this kind of thing of Ishmael in Egypt. Isaac needs to be over here in Canaan.
And it becomes after that whole episode that Abraham makes a promise he'll be the father of nations. Because originally he was going to be a great nation. Now he's going to be many nations. So God works with him, but he certainly expanded things or complicated things.
The real lesson is if your wife is beautiful, not to let her out of the house.
Well, or, have you ever heard the song? If you want to be happy for the rest of your life, take an ugly woman to be your wife. Okay. So, Shabbat Shalom, and make your way downstairs. That just records again.